Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Genesis 47 and the Great Land Transfer when we come back. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our forefathers, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." You'll read that in Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 16. Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed this scriptural principle when they put into our federal constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, Franklin D. Roosevelt took our gold away. In 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation, and in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of real silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until now we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my private business school that we conduct here twice a year at the law school. Why don't you call and order my free CD package? That's the General Law CD package. Just do that first. That's the first step. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now and order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, the Mosaic Law School and the Business School are also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Now, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, gather around, boys and girls, and let me tell you a story. You probably heard this story at one time or another in Sunday school. It's the story of Joseph in Egypt and the Great Famine, which was mirrored by Franklin D. Roosevelt and the Production Credit Association and the Federal Land Bank in the 1930s. Let me tell you the story of Joseph first. It's taken from the book of Genesis, chapter 47, verses 13 through 26. It's a short, terse, plain statement. Listen to this. "There was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and all of the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan for the corn which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all of the Egyptians came unto Joseph, and they said, 'Well, give us bread, for why should we die in your presence? For the money faileth.' And Joseph said, 'Well, give your cattle, and I will give you your cattle if money fail.' So they brought their cattle unto Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses and for flocks and for cattle of herds and for asses. And he fed them with bread for all of their cattle for that year. And when the year was ended, they came unto him the second year, and they said to him, 'We will not hide it from my lord how that our money is spent, and my lord also has our herds of cattle. There is aught left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our lands. Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh, and give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land be not desolate. And Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For the Egyptians sold every man his field, because the famine prevailed over them. So the land of Egypt became Pharaoh's. And as for the people, he removed them to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt, even to the other end thereof, their property. Only the land of the priests bought he not. For the priests had a portion assigned them of Pharaoh, and they did eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them, wherefore they sold not their lands. Then Joseph said unto the people, Behold, I have bought you this day and your land for Pharaoh. And lo, here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And it shall come to pass in the increase that you shall give the fifth part unto Pharaoh, and four parts shall be your own, for seed of the field, and for your food, and for them of your households, and for food for your little ones. And they said, You have saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants. So Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt unto this day, that Pharaoh should have the fifth part, except the land of the priests only, which became not Pharaoh's. Now there's the short story. You probably heard that story in Sunday school. I know I did when I was a youngster. And it's kind of sweet and it's kind of cute, isn't it? Kind of makes you feel warm and fuzzy all over when you read these little Bible stories, don't they? I don't think most people get very much international geopolitics out of biblical stories, but let me translate that into modern language. What happened during the Great Depression years under Franklin Roosevelt was mirrored perfectly by this international geopolitical story that occurred some 3,500 years ago and was repeated again in the United States during the Great Depression. And here's the way that story goes. The following is taken from the Book of Roosevelt, chapter 47, verse 13 through 26, written by George Gordon. And it says, There was no money in all of the land, for the Great Depression was very sore, so that the land of America and all of the several states fainted by reason of that Great Depression. And Franklin D. Roosevelt gathered up all of the gold that was in the land of America and the several states for the Federal Reserve notes, which they bought under House Joint Resolution 192. And FDR brought the gold into Fort Knox for the Federal Reserve. And when the economy failed in the land of America and in the several states, all of the Americans came unto FDR and said, Give us credit, for why should we suffer in thy presence? For the economy faileth. So Franklin Roosevelt said, Well, mortgage your properties, and the government will give you credit if the economy faileth. So the people mortgaged their property unto the government. And Franklin Roosevelt gave them credit in exchange for houses and for their farms and for their businesses and for all of their properties. And he gave them credit for their property for that year. And when that year was ended, they came unto him the second year and said unto him, We will not hide it from our president, how that our credit is spent. Our government also hath our houses and our businesses and all of our properties. There is aught left in the sight of our government but our bodies and our lands. Wherefore shall we suffer before thine eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for credit, and we and our land will be servants unto the government, and give us security that we may live and not suffer, that the nation may prosper. So Franklin Roosevelt bought all of the land of America for the Federal Reserve Bank, for the Americans mortgaged every man his field, because the Depression prevailed over them, so the land of America became the Federal Reserve Bank's land. And as for the people, he removed them to the cities under the ninth plank of the Communist Manifesto, from the one end of the borders of America even to the other end thereof. Only the land of the priests bought he not, for the priests, the Billy Grahams and Jerry Falwells, the Oral Roberts, and all of the incorporated churches had a portion assigned them of government under tax exemption, 501c3, and they did eat their portion which the government gave them, wherefore they sold not their lands. When Franklin Roosevelt said unto the people, "Behold, I have bought you this day, August 15, 1935, under the Social Security Act, in your land under the Federal Land Bank Act for the Federal Reserve Bank's low, here is security for you and for your wives and for your children, and you shall work for the national economy. And it shall come to pass, when you receive your paychecks, that you shall give an income tax of 17 to 75% of all that you create and produce unto thy government, and the rest shall be your own, for the 108 benefits given to you under the Social Security Act." And Franklin Roosevelt said, "All you have to fear is fear itself." And the people said, "You have saved us from the Great Depression. Let us find security under the government, and we will be its servants." And Franklin Roosevelt made it the law over the land of America unto this day that the government should have an income tax of 17 to 75% of everything that the people created and produced. Except, of course, the land of the priests, which came under tax exemption pursuant to 501c3. Now there's the story from Joseph in ancient Egypt to Franklin D. Roosevelt in the Great Depression of the 1930s. Now let's take a minute and let's look at this side by side, verse by verse, and let's analyze what's happened to Americans, because Americans used to be wild and free. We owned our land and we were the masters as individuals and landowners and property owners, and we used to practice the Ten Commandments. I know it sounds wild and off the wall, but we Americans practiced the common law of England, which was derived from Alfred the Great and Alfred's 49 dooms back around the 7th century AD. Alfred's dooms were taken from the Mosaic Law in Exodus 19:16 through Exodus 23 verse 8. It's called the Old Covenant, a contract negotiated by God out of Mount Sinai. Well, in Genesis 47, verses 13, let's just take a look at verse 13. "There was no bread in all of the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine." That's exactly what happened in the 1913. There was a great emergency. "There was no money in all of the land, for the Great Depression was very sore, so that the land of America and all of the several states fainted by reason of the Great Depression." Both of these events, historical events, great events in the national histories of these countries. Well, where did these great geopolitical events come from? Has anybody ever thought that the God of heaven brought about these two great events to specifically produce a result? The one in Genesis 47 is explained, and you're told plainly that it was an event, a famine created and caused by God Almighty himself for an express and deliberate purpose. Have we missed the point in the 1930s, that it was God himself who brought about the Great Depression for the exact same purpose that he did it to the Egyptians? In verse 14, "Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan for the corn which they bought, and Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house." That's what Franklin Roosevelt did. Franklin Roosevelt gathered up all the gold that was in the land of America and of the several states for the Federal Reserve notes, which they bought under House Joint Resolution 192. And Franklin Roosevelt brought the gold into Fort Knox for the Federal Reserve. Yes, they enacted legislation, and they told the people, bring your gold into the banks, and the banks will give you paper money for your gold, and we will put that gold into Fort Knox. Have you ever seen your gold cents, boys and girls? You gave up your gold, and you got worthless paper for it. And they never gave you your gold back, now did they? Verse 15, when the money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all of the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in your presence, for the money fails? And in verse 15, when the economy failed in the land of America and in the several states, all of the Americans came unto Franklin Roosevelt and said, give us credit, for why should we suffer in your presence, because the economy has failed. In both cases, you had failed economies. And when the economy fails, it brings on depression, joblessness. And during the Great Depression of the 1930s, we also had the Dust Bowl. Dust Bowl. Do you remember in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, God said, I'll make it to rain upon one place and I'll cause it not to rain upon another. I'll turn your heaven to iron and your earth to brass. That's called drought, boys and girls. Both cases, God Almighty Himself did it to us. Don't you think we ought to ask, wonder why he did that? What did we do that would bring upon us the Great Depression? Well, Joseph said, give your cattle and I'll give you your cattle if money fails. Franklin Roosevelt said, mortgage your properties and the government will give you credit if the economy fails. And yes, Franklin Roosevelt, under the Keynes economic theories, started issuing money and creating credit all over America, from the one end of America to the other, just like they're doing today, just issuing credit and pouring it out everywhere. It's what the people want. The people cry, and the government responds. Now, in the case of Genesis chapter 47, verse 17, the people brought their cattle to Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for their horses and for their flocks and for the cattle of their herds and for their asses. And he fed them with bread for all of their cattle for that year. Franklin Roosevelt did the same thing. The people mortgaged their property under the government, and FDR gave them credit in exchange for horses and for their farms and for their businesses and for all of their properties. And he gave them credit for their property for that year. And the people have had debt, credit, serfdom from the 1930s on. And it has created in America the great expansion that we see, the great migration of the people from the land to the cities, and the huge expansion of the cities. Now people in America are landless peasants, feudal serfs living in the suburbs, living the American dream in their mortgaged houses, where their mortgages represent 3.5 times their annual incomes. That's your average. In debt up to their eyeballs and unable to pay it. Credit, debt, serfs, we call them. Verse 18, Joseph writing, and when the year was ended, they came unto him the second year, and they said to him, we will not hide it from our Lord, how that our money is spent. My Lord also has our herds of cattle, and there is aught left in the sight of my Lord but our bodies and our lands. Same thing happened year after year through the 1930s, and it has not abated from the 1930s to 2005. And when the year was ended, they came unto him the second year, and they said to him, we will not hide it from our president, how that our credit is spent. Our government also has our houses and our businesses and all of our properties. There is aught left in the sight of our government but our bodies and our lands. Americans have mortgaged everything that they have. They drive mortgaged cars owned by GMAC and Ford Motor Credit. They have credit cards that are maxed out. They have an average credit card debt of $10,500 each, plus the mortgages on their homes, their dreams in the suburbs. In Genesis 47:19, wherefore shall we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread. And we in our land will be servants unto Pharaoh, and give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land be not desolate. Franklin Roosevelt did the same thing. In verse 19, wherefore shall we suffer before thine eyes, both we and our land, buy us and our land for credit, and we and our land will be servants unto the federal government, and give us security that we may live and not suffer, that the nation may prosper. So Franklin Roosevelt gave us Social Security, and we went down and signed up for Social Security. The safety net, remember? And the 108 benefits that we receive from Social Security, and we pay 16% of everything we create and produce into the Social Security program, which makes us taxpayers, so that we can pay 17% of all that we create and produce into the income tax system. That's one-third of everything that we create and produce goes to our government. Traditionally, feudal serfs under King George paid 25%. Today we pay 33%. And that's the average. That's the average Joe Sixpack. Truck drivers, forklift operators, plumbers, carpenters, and electricians. Well, Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field because the famine prevailed over them. So the land of Egypt became Pharaoh's. You see, the land of Egypt belonged to the people, and they owned their own land. But they sold it to Pharaoh. They sold it to their government. Franklin Roosevelt did the same thing in verse 20. Franklin D. Roosevelt bought all the land of America for the Federal Reserve Bank. For the Americans mortgaged every man his field because the Depression prevailed over them. So the land of America became the Federal Reserve Bank's land. You got a mortgage on your land, boys and girls? Just take a look and see if the institution that you owe that mortgage to has federal deposit insurance. Isn't that a government institution? Isn't it your central bank that issues these dollars that you're dealing in, these commercial papers, Federal Reserve notes, checks, credit cards, mortgages, the Federal Land Bank and the PCAs? In verse 21, as for the people, he removed them to the cities from the one end of the borders of Egypt, even to the other end thereof. And in America, as for the people, he removed them to the cities under the ninth plank of the Communist Manifesto, from the one end of the borders of America even to the other end thereof. And Americans have left the land. In 1920, Americans, 44% of Americans lived on the land. Today, 3% of Americans live on the land. Just like in the book of Genesis, so it was from the 1930s to 2000. In 70 years, the people have been removed from the land to the cities. Now you're locked up in your cities, totally unable to support yourselves. On your little plot of land in the suburbs, you cannot grow enough food to feed yourselves. And remember, the Global 2000 boys control your food supply. They control the Teamsters Union. They control Archer Daniels Midland. They control your imports and exports. And America now imports about one half of all of your food. One half comes from outside your borders. Verse 22, only the land of the priests bought he not, for the priests had a portion assigned them of Pharaoh. And they did eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them. Wherefore, they sold not their lands. So the religious people, the churches, kept their land under Pharaoh. And under Franklin Roosevelt, verse 22, only the land of the priests bought he not, for the priests, the Billy Grahams, the Jerry Falwells, the Oral Roberts, all of the incorporated churches have a portion assigned them from government under tax exemption. It's called 501c3. And they did eat their portion, which the government gave them, wherefore they sold not their lands. And they don't pay taxes on that land either, boys and girls. Those are your state religions. Those are your state Christian churches in league with your government. It's the church-state religion. Verse 23, Joseph said unto the people, behold, I have bought you this day and your land for Pharaoh. Lo, here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. Well, Franklin Roosevelt did the same thing to the people. He said, "Behold, I have bought you this day, August the 15th, 1935, under the Social Security Act, a guardian-ward relationship, and your land under the Federal Land Bank Act for the Federal Reserve Banks. And lo, here is security for you, and you shall work for the national economy." And today, Americans work for their national economy, headed by Alan Greenspan and the international bankers, as feudal serfs, paying one-third of everything they create and produce in the two primary taxes, Social Security and income tax, to their government. Isn't that just real special, boys and girls? Verse 24, "And it shall come to pass in the increase that you shall give the fifth part unto Pharaoh, and four parts shall be your own for seed in the, of the field, and for your food, and for them of your households, and for food for your little ones." So Pharaoh taxed the people 20%. 20%. Franklin Roosevelt said, "It shall come to pass when you receive your paychecks that you shall give an income tax of 17 to 75% of all that you create and produce unto your government, and the rest shall be your own for those 108 benefits given to you under Social Security." Yes, under our program today, boys and girls, you can be paying as much as, not everybody pays it, but as much as 75%. So you have 14 taxes: Medicare, unemployment insurance, Social Security, corporate taxes, income tax, state income tax, city income tax, man, come on, gasoline taxes, hidden taxes. Yes, there's 14 taxes that we pay, and it takes anywhere from one-third, which is the minimum, up to 75%. And we'd rather pay 75% tax than we would to pay a 10% tithe now, wouldn't we? Verse 25, "The people said to Joseph, 'You have saved our lives. Let us find grace in your sight, in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants.'" Franklin Roosevelt said the same thing. And the people said this. Franklin Roosevelt said, "All you have to fear is fear itself." And the people said, "You have saved us from the Great Depression. Let us find security under the government, and we will be its servants." And we are, we have been, and we will continue to be. And in verse 26, "Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt unto this day that Pharaoh should have the fifth part except the part of the priests, the land of the priests, which only became not Pharaoh's." Well, FDR did the same thing. He made it a law over the land of America to this day that the government should have an income tax of 17 to 75% of everything the people created and produced, except the land of the churches, which come under 501c3 tax exemption. Now, boys and girls, this isn't something that I'm predicting for the future. This is something that has already happened, past tense. This is history. As my old route manager once said to the paper boys in a meeting, he said, "News that's an hour old is history." And boys and girls, the news that I just gave you is history. It's already a done deal. It was a done deal 3,500 years ago when Joseph did it to the Egyptians. And it was a done deal by the end of World War II when Franklin Roosevelt did it to the Americans. Well, we're at about the halfway point. Let me take our break right here, and we'll come right back with more on Genesis 47 and our story, The Great Land Transfer, when we come back. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide around the world over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And you can download these programs on 32 16-bit, I believe they call that, or 16-bit, whichever your computer will handle. Just like the radio stations do around the world, they simply download it off of the internet in CD quality. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call the school direct, 417-273-4967. In 1884, a short paper was written. Actually, I guess it's not too short. It's called The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. One of the protocols, protocol number 6, deals with land and how land has to be put into a condition of unconditional subordination. People must be deprived of their land in order for government to control them. Two things that we need to do to reduce you to a feudal serf. First, take your land away because all wealth comes out of the ground. Second, we need to take all of your money, your gold and silver away in order to reduce you to poverty. Government has done both. Here in the United States, and I suspect in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Rhodesia, Western Europe, governments have done the same thing. And they do it under the Communist Manifesto. Americans and Anglo-Saxons around the world have adopted communism in place of the Ten Commandments. Rather than practice the Ten Commandments, we now practice the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And this is the beginning of the communist era in the United States and indeed in Western Anglo-Saxon administration. Listen to this story. It says, "We shall soon begin to establish huge monopolies, colossal reservoirs of wealth upon which even the big Gentile properties will be dependent to such an extent that they will all fall together with the government credit on the day following the political catastrophe." These are the Walmarts and the IBMs, General Motors and General Electrics, huge, colossal reservoirs of multinational corporate wealth, which buys our fascist government. We bribe our politicians. Here in America, we don't call it bribery. We call it campaign contributions. The economists here present must carefully weigh the significance of this combination, and we must develop by every means the importance of our super government. It's called the United Nations, representing it as the protector and the benefactor of all who voluntarily submit to us. The aristocracy of the Gentiles as a political force has passed away, and we need not take them into consideration. But as owners of the land, they are harmful to us in that they are independent in their sources of livelihood, and therefore at all costs we must deprive them of their land. The best means to attain this is to increase the taxes and the mortgage indebtedness. These measures will keep land ownership in a state of unconditional subordination. Unable to satisfy their needs by small inheritances, the aristocrats among the Gentiles will burn themselves out rapidly. At the same time, it is necessary to encourage trade and industry vigorously, and especially speculation, the function of which is to act as a counterpoise to industry. Without speculation, industry will cause private capital to increase and tend to improve the condition of agriculture by freeing the land from indebtedness for loans by the land banks. It is necessary for industry to deplete the land both of laborers and capital, and through speculations transfer all of the money of the world into our hands, thereby throwing the Gentiles into the ranks of the proletariat. The Gentiles will then bow before us to obtain the right to existence. That's the sixth protocol of the Learned Elders of Zion. Isn't that just special? Well, let's go through this one once more. Just take us a minute. We shall soon begin to establish huge monopolies and colossal reservoirs of wealth. Already done past tense. We call it Walmart, General Electric, and General Motors. Upon which even the big Gentile properties will be dependent to such an extent that they will all fall together with the government credit on the day following the political catastrophe. We have two of those. The first occurred in the 1930s, and the second one is right on the horizon today. The second Great Depression, the collapse of the world's economy, so that we can be merged into the New World Order and the One World Government. The economists here present must carefully weigh the significance of this combination, and we must develop by every means the importance of our super government, the United Nations. That's what we're dealing with here, the super One World Government, representing it as the protector and benefactor of all who voluntarily submit to us. And when they reorganize the world's monetary system, you will be required to get your mark of the beast. That's right. You're in debt up over your eyeballs. You will go to your bank, and they will give you your mark so that you can stay in your house. It's either that or you lose everything. Boys and girls, you will line up for the mark of the beast and thank God for your good fortune. Now, the aristocracy of the Gentiles as a political force has passed away, and we need not take them into consideration. But as owners of the land, they're harmful to us in that they are independent in their sources of livelihood. Those people who own a piece of land out in the country, free and clear, are independent. Now, in the last 5 years since George Bush took over, we've noticed that interest rates have dropped to 1%, and people have gone out and refinanced their houses, taken the money and bought new SUVs and swimming pools, and had an orgy of wild new spending and put themselves even deeper into the pit of debt. Now, the best means to attain all of this is to increase the taxes and mortgage indebtedness, which is exactly what's happened over the last 5 years. These measures will keep land ownership in a state of unconditional subordination. At all costs, we must deprive them of their land. Of course. You see, as owners of the land, if you people were free and clear and you owned your property, you would have power. But always remember, the debtor is servant to the lender. Unable to satisfy their needs by small inheritances, the aristocrats among the Gentiles will burn themselves out rapidly. And at the same time, it'll be necessary to encourage trade and industry vigorously, and especially speculation. That's your stocks and bonds, strictly prohibited in the Scripture. Insurance is strictly prohibited in the Scripture. But we Americans have adopted insurance, stocks, bonds, speculation, the lottery. We are a nation of gamblers, the function of which is to act as a counterpoise to industry. Without speculation, industry will cause private capital to increase and tend to improve the condition of agriculture by freeing the land from indebtedness for loans by the land banks. Franklin Roosevelt encouraged us to go into debt. They brought about the Great Depression for the express purpose of putting Americans into debt to take your gold and silver away from you and to mortgage your land, to move you from the land to the cities so that you can be more easily and better controlled. It is necessary for industry to deplete the land both of laborers and of capital. Take a look at America today out in the countryside. The cities, the little small towns, are withering on the vine. They're closing their doors, and the people are moving to the cities where there's greater opportunity for more and more profit, more and more usury, more and more commercial paper. And through speculation, transfer all of the money of the world into our hands. All the money of the world is in the hands of the Wall Street bankers. They control every dollar in the world. Every euro, every escudo, every ruble in the world is controlled by our central banks worldwide. Thereby, it will throw the Gentiles into the ranks of the proletariat, the commoners, the serfs. The Gentiles will then bow before us to obtain the right to existence. Translated from Revelation 13:16, you will line up at the doors of your banks to get your mark of the beast, boys and girls, so that you can stay in your homes and keep your jobs. Isn't that just real special? Now notice the allusions to the Communist Manifesto. Franklin Sanders wrote a piece in the March Money Changer. You can get a copy of the Money Changer by simply calling 888-218-9226. Again, that's 888-218-9226. This is from the Money Changer, Volume 23, Number 11, March 2005. Franklin Sanders says that about 1954, Murray Timber Company of Ohio moved to Lawrence County, Tennessee, and they opened a factory there. Now, the first generation of country people who went to work there held on to their farms, and they worked 18-hour days. After a shift at the factory, they would go home and raise all of their crops, tend all of their animals that they ever had, owning their own land. They were able to build up an estate and pass it on to their children. And then they went down into Egypt. The second generation was content to work at the factory and let the land go. They moved to the cities. If they stayed, they limited their farming to raising cattle or trees. Most of the land wound up in the hands of the paper companies. Now, the third generation depends completely on their factory jobs. In the meantime, the Murray Timber Company, as the largest employer in the county, has now set wage rates, and they set them low, very low, so that wage rates have remained low over the past 50 years. After all, the timber company didn't move down here to Tennessee because they were philanthropists. They moved down here because labor was cheap. Meanwhile, the rest of the local middle class has nearly disappeared, aided no doubt by dropping wages and the invasion of Walmart and the box stores and other chains. The multitude of restaurants, bakeries, small shops, groceries, hardware stores, shoe shops, dry goods stores, dairies, craftsmen, and most of the other small businesses have simply vanished. What middle class that remains is a small crust of lawyers, doctors, dentists, and of course, the inevitable bankers. Now, in a county once covered with independent farmers and freeholders, self-sufficient farmers and small business owners, most people have now become propertyless employees, feudal serfs, working on corporate land. And the predictable sequel unfolded through the fall of 2004 as the Murray Company teetered on bankruptcy. In one morning, they laid off over 100 supervisory personnel. Then they shut down two of their three production lines. What employees are left expect the rest of their production to be shipped off to Mexico or China, where the labor is still cheaper. On November the 8th, 2004, Murray declared bankruptcy. In January 2005, the company was sold to its largest creditor, Briggs & Stratton, and they will close down operations in 18 months, and the salaried employees will be laid off in the fall. Very few of the employees believe the plant will remain open as long as 18 months. Health and lifestyle come into play. The shift from freeholder to employee has led also to lifestyle and diet changes. You see, no longer do these people exercise in their work all day or eat a diet high in vegetables, homegrown meat and fresh eggs and raw milk. But now they get very little exercise and they eat a processed diet. They're now weighted down with soy and sugar and refined flour, soft drinks and other carbohydrates. Their diet and lifestyle changes leave the third generation with chronic health problems and notably high blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity. And without insurance furnished by an employer, they can no longer afford health care, which keeps them chained to a job. And over the same 50 years, people who trained their children to avoid debt have now become addicted to debt. And where once father and mother labored their whole lives to pass on a farm or land or business to their children mortgage and debt free, the children are now mired in their chains in debt as landless peasants. Not only have government schools and agencies taught them that no one can succeed in business or farming without constant borrowing, but the consumer society has also seduced them into mortgages and car loans and credit card debt and borrowing of all kinds. Where once only daddy worked, now mama must work also to make the payments, so the children must go to daycare. And if these people lose their jobs, they lose everything because they own nothing. Now that's from the Money Changer, Volume 23, Number 11, March 2005. Now I recommend the Money Changer to all of my listeners. It's one of three newsletters that I think that everybody ought to subscribe to, The Privateer, The International Forecaster, and The Money Changer. Three different newsletters that cover three different topics, three different subject matters to keep you informed as to what's going on around the world and what you need to be doing about it. Remember the Money Changer, the telephone number to call, 888-218-9226. Again, that's 888-218-9226. It's the Volume 23, Number 11, March 2005 issue. Now, the Communist Manifesto has been put in place of our Ten Commandments. We Americans, who were and still are a religious people, have now changed our religion from the religion of the God of Abraham now to the religion of the state. And the first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of property and land and application of all rent of land to public purposes. In Idaho, where I'm from, they have the land divided into two portions. 64% belongs to government, 36% belong to the people, and the 36% that belongs to the people is taxed. They have what's called a property tax on that. So if you want to use any of that 64% of the land that belongs to the government, you have to go to the BLM or the Department of Agriculture and you sign a contract and you lease it for grazing or timber rights. That money is paid over to the National Treasury and is paid out for public purposes. And then you have the property tax, which goes into the state or National Treasury, depending upon which tax you're paying, and that too is paid out for public purposes. Do you do that in your state where you live? The second plank calls for a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. Do you pay a progressive income tax where you live in your state? Third plank calls for the abolition of all right of inheritance. Well, now, it just so happens that governments have inheritance taxes at both the state and the federal level. The inheritance tax takes just about one-third of the estate, which is just about right. After all, you got a marriage license, do you remember that? And then you created an estate. Roy and Agnes married. They married with a third party, the state of New York. And when old Roy died, Agnes said, "Well, oh good, I get all the toys." And the state of New York came in and said, "Wait a minute, Agnes. Wait a minute. Buy me out. Buy me out, Agnes." And so the heiress, the heirs, pay one-third the state's share of the three-party limited general partnership called the marriage license, the third plank to the Communist Manifesto. And if you don't like this program, the fourth plank calls for the confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. And we have tax protesters. And we have people that will not subscribe to this communist program. They're called immigrants and rebels, and we put them in jail. Do you have any of those in your state? The fifth plank calls for the centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. In America, we call that the Federal Reserve Bank, passed under the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. Congress delegated that power to coin money to the international banking cartel. Just like our inheritance tax laws were implemented by the marriage license. And just like our regional government and absolute federal control over all property, public and private. And just like our land use bill, S-268, and EPA rules, and the Department of Natural Resources, and land acquisitions, and property condemnations, and the income tax, and the 16th Amendment, and Title 26 of the U.S. Code, and Title 42 of the U.S. Code, and the 11 chapters of Social Security. You see, we have codified these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. They're codified right into our national and state laws. The sixth plank calls for the centralization of the means of communication and transport in the hands of the state. And we do this under the Federal Communications Commission and regulations and Executive Order 10,995, which provides for the takeover of the communications media, and the Department of Transportation regulations and Executive Order 10,999, which provides for the takeover of all modes of transportation. Comes from the Federal Register. And the seventh plank of the Communist Manifesto, which calls for the extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, and the bringing into cultivation of wastelands, and the improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. Well, in Idaho, where I'm from, we call this bringing into cultivation of wastelands the Desert Land Entry Act, and the improvement of the soil general in accordance with the common plan, those are called soil conservation districts, and the extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state are called corporations. Don't you have those in your state where you live? Now, the eighth plank calls for equal liability of all to labor and the establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. That comes under the Federal Emergency Public Works Program, and Executive Order 11,000 provides for mobilization of civilians into government work brigades under government supervision. We call it Social Security, boys and girls. You ought to take a look at your Social Security contract. You'll find it in Title 42, Section 301 through Section 335. As they say down at the Blue Room, read 'em and weep. The tenth plank calls for free education for all children in public schools, and the abolition of children's factory labor in its present form, and the combination of education with industrial production. The federal aid to education and government-controlled schools, we call it free public education. Do you know what that free public education costs? On average, more than $7,000 to educate one child in public school for 1 year. Many schools, have costs in excess of $20,000 per pupil per year. The average cost of educating a child in parochial school is under $3,000, and the average cost of educating a child at home in a homeschooling program is under $600. $600 for homeschool, $3,000 for parochial school, $7,000 for public school, and we call that free public education. That's the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Do you go to public school, boys and girls? Did you go to public school, boys and girls? and the abolition of children's factory labor in its present form, our children today spend their time in the arcades playing video games and shooting people off of street corners and joining gangs. Time was in America when our children went to work and learned a trade, learned a skill, learned how to support themselves. I know it was a wild, barbaric custom from ancient times. The last plank, called the ninth plank to the Communist Manifesto, calls for the combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries and the gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more equitable distribution of population over the country. We today call this urban renewal, population control, and metro regional planning programs. In 1920, the population of America hit 100 million people. In 1922, 44 million of those people lived on the land, nearly half. But by 1940, the population of people on the land had declined from 44%, or about 44 million, to just 32 million. The Great Depression, remember, forced many of these people to move off the land and into the cities. Then, by 1950, the population had dropped to 15 million living on the land. World War II, remember, Rosie the Riveter? More people moved to the city. By 1969, 6 million people remained on the land. Today, there are 1,900,000 farmers in America. About 3 million people live on the land. We have more people locked up in our prisons than we have producing our food. 97% of us are now locked up in the cities. Remember? Genesis 47. Franklin D. Roosevelt. And the results are the practice of these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Oh, by the way, I forgot to ask. How many of these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto do you practice in your everyday way of life today, where you live in America? And think about that, because could it be that the practice of these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto has caused the problems that we now see in America today? The problems that we talk about on the air. Because when we Americans practice the Ten Commandments, and keep this in mind, that in 1900, just 100 years ago or so, we Americans were practicing not a single one of these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, not one. They were all starting. There were little pockets of it around the country, but by and large, Americans were not practicing any of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and today we're practicing all 10. Well, at least we're practicing all 10 here in Ozark County, Missouri, where I live. Well, we're about out of time, boys and girls. We'll have to leave it right here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet 7 days a week. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. It says time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.